Thanks for downloading a 3CR podcast. 3CR is an independent community radio station based in Melbourne, Australia. We need your financial support to keep going. Go to www.3cr.org.au for more information and to donate online. Now stay tuned for your 3CR podcast.
Now I'm a union man. Amazed at what I am, I say what I think, that the company stinks. Yes, I'm a union man. When we meet in the local hall, I'll be voting with them all with a hell of a shout. It's out, brothers, out, and the rise of the company's fall. Oh, yeah.
Australia will run out of fuel in 27 days. Good morning, listeners and members. Welcome to Radical Radio 3CR. You're listening to Fire Up MUA. My name's David Bond. I'm here with my co-host, Aaron Moon, and our producer, Annie.
Good morning, David. Nice doomsday prepping message you had to start the show off with.
And we'll run out of diesel in 32 days.
Oh, I've got five more days than you, don't I?
And that is the situation in Australia with regards to our fuel reserves, which is a massive problem for us.
It is a big problem for us. And the fact that we're reliant entirely on international trade just really exacerbates that problem.
So if there was some sort of blockade in Singapore or like the Russian war, we actually get a lot of our fuel from Russia still. There's a chance that our fuel will be blocked coming into Australia, and our reserves are seriously 27 days for petrol, 32 days for diesel. We're down to two refineries, one in Geelong, Viva Run, and one in Lytton, Queensland. So we've really lost our capacity to produce fuel and to protect our reserves.
We have indeed, and I remember this discussion was happening. It would have been probably about 5 years ago now, and Scott Morrison, Prime Minister of the time, his solution was to buy a bunch of oil reserves that are kept in the United States from memory. I think that by the time that we sent a ship to get them from here, collected them, and turned out, we were already out of fuel.
Yeah.
So it
that's not the answer.
It's not the answer, no. And the situation still hasn't been addressed.
No. So obviously the answer is building an Australian strategic fleet, which would of course put our members back on the coast where they should be. The ships have been taken off our coast over the last decades by successive Australian governments. We're down to around 12 or 13 Australian flagged vessels on the coast. None of those vessels carry fuel. All the fuel that's moved around the coast of Australia is moved via international ships. And of course, those seafarers are exploited.
Exploited heavily, to say the least. And it's a peculiar thing that we would hate exploitation here in Australia in any form. And when people see that truck drivers are being exploited or any worker, really, there is outrage and upset. But if it happens just past where the waves break, just behind where Bawley's surfing, it seems to get a bit lost
and
a bit forgotten. So
a lot of this whole system relies on cheap labour. They want cheap labour. In fact, the security of the country is less important than having cheap labour.
Yes,
that's what you're saying.
Absolutely, that's what we're saying. And like Dave said, it's been a consistent theme of multiple governments. We do have a commitment from the current Labor government. We had a commitment in the last term as well to to revitalise Australian shipping. And to the credit of Prime Minister Albanese, you won't hear me say that much, but when he was a transport minister, they did in 2012 introduce a Revitalising Australian Shipping Act, which was the beginning, but there are still holes to be plugged in that. That is all work to be done still, because right now we still have those ships with the exploited labour able to stop at two ports and do that on international wages. So they can stop, they can shoot down from Singapore, stop at Queensland, then stop at Melbourne, and then go off to New Zealand or another country and completely.
Avoid paying Australian wages.
Avoid paying Australian wages. And look, the reality is often they stop at more than two ports and still avoid paying Australian wages, because we have four individuals in Australia as a bit of a watchdog on our coast in the ITF Inspectorate, and they do an amazing job. And each year they return tens of millions of US dollars back to the pockets of seafarers. Tens of millions of dollars to people who are getting paid $2 a day. So that is how
greedy they are.
Greedy they are, and also how widespread the issue is, right? Because if somebody's on $1,200 or $800 US a month,
yeah,
and you're taking that from them, it takes a lot of those people to. You have to take a lot of money off a lot of people, a lot of times, to be able to reach $10 million in a 12-month period.
So mean.
Hey, and we're talking about international shipping companies that make billions of dollars, including MSC, the Mediterranean Shipping Company, that's owned by Switzerland, Maersk, who's owned in Denmark by the Møller Maersk family. They're valued at around $21 billion.
Billion with a B.
B.
Yeah.
CMA out of France and Costco out of China. They're the five biggest shipping companies in the world, all worth billions of dollars, all destroying the lives of international seafarers, paying them nothing. So when Aaron was talking about, you know, the ships coming to Australia, they are meant to start paying Australian awards seafaring conditions. And as Aaron outlined, these ships are just not doing it. These shipping companies are not doing it. It takes our inspectors from the ITF to get on board to force this to be paid.
Yeah, and often they have to get on board, argue their way to get on board, and then argue for the second set of books, because the company's almost always got a set of dodgy books on board, and you look at them and you go, they don't match what the seafarers are getting paid, and then we have to do it. So there is, again, another solution for or a way to stop this exploitation, and it's revitalise Australian shipping. To use a bit of a seafaring metaphor, is that the rising tide can lift all boats, and in this case, we can lift the wages of Australian seafarers and make sure that international seafarers that visit our country and work along our coast get paid appropriately.
So we're calling out to the Transport Minister, Catherine King, who's out in Ballarat. Not too many oceans around Ballarat, but
not too many foreign flagships calling at the port of Ballarat.
No, they don't. But Minister King is working with the MUA towards coordinating this massive project of revitalising Australian shipping, changing some few basic laws, like the award-free permit voyages only need to be changed through the Fair Work Act. We don't even need to change the Coastal Trading Act to do that. So it's a stroke of a pen. It can be done. And there's a lot of other things we can do, including, you know, reducing company tax on Australian shipping, reducing the PAYE tax on Australian seafarers who work on Australian shipping. You know, all these international companies that come into Australia, the shipping companies, they're not paying tax in Australia, and yet the Australian shipping industry is taxed heavily at around 30%. And it's just making it really hard. There's the basic changes that they could do. They heavily subsidise other industries. So we're calling on Minister Catherine King. We're calling on the Albanese government to get their act together, get this thing moving. Our members have been fighting for the Australian Strategic Fleet under so many different names, the Fuel Security Campaign. It has been going on for quite a long time now. Enough's enough. It's a second-term Albanese government, a Labor government. We're in their first year. It's now or never, or we're going to go to war.
Well, David, that's the problem.
You spat the dummy.
Always. we might not be able to go to war. If we do, we can only do it for 27 days.
That's right.
By that, all we're going to do is outlast them for 27 days and the tanks will run out of fuel. So, you know, maybe we're in a good spot.
Yeah,
Mind you, they could invest in renewables, you know, or invest in, people who investigate new fuel sources, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
But they're not going to do that.
Yeah, like renewable energy.
Yeah. Oh, what's that?
Well, renewable... The strategic fleet is not simply about fossil fuels either. It's not only about petroleum and diesel. It's part of it, and in the view of particularly the Vic branch, is that offshore wind vessels can make up a component of that because it will be part of our energy mix, and it should be. And the ability for offshore wind developers to get the required vessels in time, or from the international market down here, when we don't have a full and firm plan to develop multiple offshore wind sites, will be difficult. So the Star of the South, or Southerly 10, will have problems getting vessels down here, as will Spinifex down in Western Victoria along the Warrnambool coast.
Orsted.
Orsted will have difficulties, probably less so than everyone else because of their international reach, but there will be issues getting vessels down here because there's no consistent or firm plan or commitment from industry or the government to developing the actual industry. So the strategic fleet could make up a component of that. Those vessels are specialised jack-up vessels that are required. They'll be required for the construction, the deconstruction, and in some instances, some vessels will be utilised throughout the life of those offshore wind farms. So for us as an Australian government to own or at least have a significant stake in a offshore wind construction vessel will not only make economic sense, but it will provide stability for that industry.
I know this is going a little bit off reservation, but I was wondering why the governments, successive governments, have spent a lot of time building manufacturing in warfare items rather than, say, the blades for the wind turbines. And why aren't we doing those things?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a good question. Why are we not doing those things? And Why are we not tipping money into? We've got in Victoria the capacity to do blades down in Portland, and the for the
Keppel Prince, I think,
Keppel Prince
company,
or something like that. I'm sure as a company they're no good. You know, all bosses are bastards, but the factories down there, it needs to be upgraded to deal with the scale and the size of the infrastructure that will be required for offshore wind. But you're right, we should be tipping money as a government into developing those areas, nationalising them first and then developing them so that we can create jobs here in Australia to build infrastructure that will service the Australian people and allow us to continue to live comfortably as a nation and with the security, the energy security that we need. So it absolutely it wasn't off the reservation at all, Annie, I don't think. When we're spending $368 billion on submarines to be built in the US when we have the capacity to build ships here in South Australia or in Kwinana in WA.
In Williamstown
as well. Sorry, comrade, I forgot to be more parochial. Here in Williamstown. We don't need, as a nation, to be spending that money on things that we won't get for technology that will be outdated from a friend, in inverted commas, that doesn't give a fuck about us.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
It's just another example of the Australian government failing to protect Australian jobs and failing to develop Australian manufacturing. I just want to give one more example around the exploitation of international seafarers. You know, once upon a time when a ship came to Australia, it was carrying a product, and after that product was removed, let's say some sort of fertiliser, then the ship would go to another port and pick up grain. We would have Australian workers come on board the ship and clean out the holds. Now, the entire cement industry, Boral down in Geelong, used to employ hundreds of people manufacturing cement, and it's just become less viable for them to do that, or more profitable for them to do that overseas and import the cement. Part of that viability is based on the fact that international seafarers are forced to clean out those holds. The ship comes alongside, Australian wharfies discharge the cement, then the ship gets forced outside the heads, and the international seafarers, with cloths wrapped around their faces, on ropes and ladders, go down and clear the holds out of the cement. And it's an absolute disgrace, and the Australian government has allowed this to happen. This is the type of thing that needs to stop. And, you know, companies like Boral would all of a sudden go, oh, look, we might actually manufacture in Australia. It's not so profitable when you've got to pay the way you should have to pay. So anyway, that's another example of international seafarers getting exploited.
Just imagine the health and safety issues that go into
atrocious
for those blokes.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the unrecorded, but the particularly that scenario, the amount of individuals that will almost certainly die of silicosis would be phenomenal and
never be recorded.
Never be recorded, and the human cost will never be truly recorded because it's all in the pursuit of profits for companies, and they hide behind labour laws from across the globe that are insufficient.
And I think that's a good timing to go to our first song. It is called Ship of Fools by World Party. You enjoyed that song by World Party, Ship of Fools. It's actually a metaphorical meaning.
Yeah, you started off with doomsday prepping comments, and then with that song, while sounding quite upbeat. What is it, David? Tell the listeners.
It critiques materialism, greed, and the negative consequences of choices made by those in power.
And a metaphor
which we're living.
A metaphor for the direction that society is failing in.
Yeah. Sure is, but not everywhere we're failing in, and we are getting some good outcomes industrially here in Victoria and nationally. I just wanted to talk a little bit about Link Stevedores. They operate out of Melbourne, Geelong, and Western Port in Victoria, but also 11 other ports around the country. And I just wanted to talk about one aspect of the Link's relationship, which is around labour reviews. Every once a year, we do a labour review where we review the hours worked by our members and the grades that they work in, and we try and determine whether there's room for promotion through from, you know, casual to part-time, part-time to permanent. And what we've been finding is Links are blocking the move up to the permanent category. They don't mind moving casuals to permanent part-time, but when it comes to moving permanents to part-time people to permanent, they put a roadblock up.
And shocking that an employer doesn't like permanent labour.
Yeah, it's like turning the clock back 20 years at the moment with one of the managers in particular who has just got that ideological view. You know, he's trying to block permanent jobs, and I know the workforces around the country are finding it extremely frustrating. You know, you have to average a certain amount of hours to get a permanent job. It's 1,820 hours, and one branch in Australia fell short by 7 hours, so they refused to upgrade anyone into the permanent category. Yet here in Melbourne, where the triggers weren't met to produce permanent part-time jobs, the company came in offering casuals to be upgraded to part-time. So It's just outrageous, and it's a massive problem, and it might be a relationship burner. So we're going to have to work out where we're going to go from that.
And Lynx are not the only ones who are blocking people going or getting permanent jobs. I say permanent jobs. The guys down at DP World, we're in there this afternoon to have a discussion with the company around transitioning already permanent employees from a variable roster to a fixed roster. And we say that they owe us a number of jobs. Their argument is likely to be that they don't. So, and it is, again, just ideological. They just want absolute flexibility in their labour, and they don't want to give any working man or woman a bit of certainty, a bit of structure, and a bit of consistency by providing a roster. These rosters also, we should add, cover 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. People are working midnights consistently.
One day off a year, Christmas Day.
Yeah, Christmas Day is the only day a year that the site shuts down. And our guys come through, work those rosters, but the company still wants more.
More flexibility.
More flexibility.
So how long, when do they get told what their roster will be?
Often, at 2 o'clock the day before.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
In the afternoon.
Well, 2 o'clock's good. Some places are 3, 4 o'clock.
Yeah. So it can happen.
Even though they're working consistently the same job. Same job.
They are doing the same work, and they just, they want sheer and utter flexibility. They also want the individuals to be at the whim of the company and ready to go at any point in time.
That's ideological.
It is solely ideological. And
I mean, if it was a relationship, you'd call it abusive.
Yeah, absolutely. And
we do call it abusive.
it is abusive. It's exploitative and
coercive.
Coercive. And even the jobs that they owe us, we had to go to the Fair Work Commission 2.5 weeks ago and put a case forward that they owe us the transition of 3 people. I think it's up to 6 now because of resignations and terminations. But they owe us 3 people, and we're waiting on the commission to come back and see whether or not they find in our favour, because they are holding out over or digging their heels in over 3 individuals, giving 3 people, that's 3 men or women with families, consistency, reliability and predictability in their lives, and they're just holding off. So we're in there today again to keep the fight up, and we're waiting on the courts to let us know about the previous fight.
Just remind me, Aaron, how much tax does DP World pay in Australia?
I think I can count it all on 0 hands because it's 0 tax, and it's the fact that they're doing nothing but robbing Australia. They're not giving good, solid jobs with consistency. They're not paying tax. They're exploiting our workforce. They're robbing truck drivers. They are not a good company at all.
No, it's time the Australian government stepped in and sorted that out. We just want to quickly report back that there has been a lot of legal action around Cube and the QBA campaign that resulted from the QB campaign. At one stage, and we have reported on this show before, 20 of our members here in Melbourne, including our Secretary Robbie Lumsden and the Deputy Secretary of the MUA, Warren Smith, were being sued. Those charges have been dropped, it's a discontinuance of those accusations, allegations, and we all knew why. It was absolute rubbish. It was just a political game being played by Cube. So we've come out on top again there. We've still got a few blues happening with Cube around annual accumulated hours. We'll win those 2, comrades. So stick fat, and we'll get through all that tough time.
And
what were they accused of?
Taking illegal industrial action. Was the accusation. It was just false, and it was fabricated to try and put pressure on the guys during the time when they were taking legal industrial action. We jumped all the hurdles under the Fair Work Act to be able to get there. We took all the notices, did everything correctly, and
they're
the company
considerable.
Yeah, they are considerable, yeah.
So the action actually said that would take protected industrial action against Maersk Shipping, and the ship that they took action against was owned by a subsidiary of Maersk, and so they claimed that it was a legal action.
It was something like that, yeah. But the ship...
Oh, no, it wasn't Maersk, it was Wilhamsen.
But the ship itself had the name of the company, Wilhamsen, in the action written in letters larger than any individual on the side of the vessel.
Yeah,
it was madness.
Yeah, clearly just a political game by Cube.
Absolutely.
We're coming towards the end of the program, comrades. We hope you've enjoyed it. We're going to stick with World Party as a going out song. It's called Put the Message in a Box. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, comrades.
You've been listening to a 3CR podcast produced in the studios of independent community radio station 3CR in Melbourne, Australia. For more information, go to allthews.3cr.org.au.